Welcome to the Power of the Purse podcast, the only show connecting women professionals to their peers. Join us in a vibrant conversation about the constant struggle to find balance between the demands of their careers and their relationships with money, family, and personal freedom. This isn't just about money. This is about life. Now, here's your host, Lynn S. Evans.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Lynn S. Evans, and I am the host of Power of the Purse podcast. We should know that personal finance isn't about being rich or getting rich quick. It's about buying independence and freedom of choice. You are not alone as you struggle with being the perfect wife, mother, daughter, daughter-in-law, and all the other traditional roles assigned to us by our culture. These pressures can feel overwhelming. And when we add the demands of a career on top of it all, many women choose to pass on dealing with money issues until they're forced to, and that's not the best time to learn. Here we explore the stories of women and how they've handled the demands of finance, family, and career. We talk about falling short of perfection, but also about the lessons we've learned and the best advice our peers have to offer for financial security and putting our perceived failures in their proper place. My mission is to help women have a healthy, positive relationship with money. With that in mind, my guest today is Stacy Alcorn. Stacy defines herself as an entrepreneur, an author, a blogger, and a mom. Welcome, Stacy.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be on your program.
Thanks. We have so many things to talk about. I don't even know where to start, but I'll jump in with something that I was fascinated by in an interview I listened to a while ago that you did with a mutual friend of ours, Stephen Westner. And you talked about that there were points in your life where you had lots and lots of material wealth, and then you lost it. And you had some kind of a story running in your head that I'd love to have you talk about. You said you realized that, well, when that happened, you came from nothing, so you can go back to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about that.
So very early in my career, I own a bunch of real estate offices today throughout New England. Early in my career, I was in my 20s when I started as an entrepreneur. And by the age of 30 years old, I had basically amassed a significant amount of wealth. I had a big house that I had built. I bought a house on the ocean as a second home. I had sports cars that literally I would match my shoes to the car I was going to drive in the morning. And not long after turning 30 years old, say my early 30s, I had basically lost most of my wealth, mostly because the real estate market had a significant downturn. So I had...
This was when?
This was, let's see, 2000s, like 2005, 6, 7.
Uh-huh, okay.
So I had built up a massive career, but I owned a mortgage company, real estate companies, et cetera, and had never experienced a massive downturn in the market and hadn't prepared for it. So all of a sudden, the market turned, and I found myself selling off everything I had just so that I could put it all back into my business so that I could keep my businesses. So I sold my big house. I sold my house on the ocean, my sports cars, et cetera. And since that has happened for, say, the last 10 to 13 years of my life, I have really examined that time because I said to myself, whatever I did wrong the first time in my life, I never want to end up doing that again. And I think it was a whole bunch of different things. But one big piece of it is, in all of the years I had been accumulating massive wealth, I used to tell myself that I came from nothing, I'd be okay with nothing. This is the story I would tell myself every day. And the purpose of the story was I did not come from money. So My family was a blue-collar family. My dad was and is an auto mechanic. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. We didn't have massive wealth. And what I was trying to tell myself is that I didn't, even though I had amassed all these things in my life, they weren't that important to me because I do care about friendships and seeing a sunrise or a sunset. Like, those are the things that matter to me. But what I inadvertently did is I programmed myself day in and day out to say I came from nothing, I'd be okay with nothing. I came from nothing, I'd be okay with nothing. And I've come to learn that we become the stories we tell ourselves in our head every day. And one day I woke up and I had nothing. The universe had given me what I said I'd be okay with for a decade, which was nothing. So today I'm very, very, very careful about the stories I tell myself, the stories I have going on in my head, because I know that my future is a byproduct of the stories I'm telling myself today.
That's great. I think I mentioned this once before, that I can't believe how parallel our careers have been in the same regard, that I built up a lot of things. I had a great business. And then 2008 and 9 came along, which were exactly following the real estate collapse.
Yep.
And I was in the same place. Mm-hmm. And I just said, wow, I have to go back to having nothing.
Yes.
And it, all I had to say is that I don't know where it came from, but about 5 months before that happened, I just decided I should go and get a line of credit at a bank. Never had one.
Wow.
And
lucky.
It is, unbelievable. It was that sustained me through this until we got to a point where I could honestly breathe at the end of a quarter and say, we're going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
But boy, that was a tough couple of years. Mm-hmm. And I never said that part to myself coming from nothing, because it's true. I did. Mm-hmm. Same situation.
Wow.
But it also made me think about something. How did your family and your especially your parents react to you building the wealth in the beginning?
I'll say I had a lot of naysayers in my life back then, because, and I recognize that they were worried about me. My mother still worries about me. I always say I know I'm on the right track to do something when my mother tells me I shouldn't do it.
That's good.
They just lived a very conservative life, and they still do. So, like I bought my first piece of real estate when I was 19 years old. And much of this happened by accident. I had to pay my way through college. So I got a full-time job at a mortgage company when I was 18 or 19 years old. I was working in the back office of a mortgage company, really getting to understand how particular mortgage program work, which was a 203k rehab mortgage. But because I was in the back office learning how the programs worked, I ended up finding myself wanting to buy real estate. So, and back then, I'll say, I mean, property prices back then, this is the early 90s in my market, were, I mean, my first house I bought for $35,000. So I bought my first house at 19 years old. It was a two family, and I ended up rehabbing it and selling it. And my family was like so against it. They're like, you're crazy, you're going to lose all of your money. And I continued, I went forward anyways. I ended up buying the house. And then that's ended up being how I paid my way through college. I ended up flipping somewhere around 20 pieces of real estate while I was working at the mortgage company. That paid my way through the college I was going to, and eventually that catapulted me to buy my first real estate office. And today I have 22 real estate offices. So
now wait, let's hold on a minute. Mm-hmm. Go back to something you said. You said that you flipped 20 properties while you were going to school. So in 4 years,
yes.
Was it 4 years?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, because some people take the extended term, you know.
Yes. No, it was
4 years you flipped 20 properties.
Yeah.
How did you do all that and go to school and work?
I don't know. I think in general, I manage my time well, or at least I try to manage my time well, but I found great teams of people that could help. I didn't personally do the work. So I hired crew members that would go out and manage the rehabs of the properties. So
it's amazing. So when you did the first one and your parents said you're going to lose your money.
Yes.
And you went to the second, third, fourth one.
Yes.
Did they finally concede and say, I think you're onto something?
Oh, God, yeah. They were buying real estate within a couple
of
years. So they've done a few flips.
Well done.
And my dad still occasionally does one. But I always tell him, like, my dad's a handy person. So when he buys a piece of property to flip, he actually goes into the house and does a big chunk of the work, which I constantly tell him. I'm like, Dad, it's not the best use of your time, because if you're spending 3 weeks in this house rehabbing it, that means you're not running your automotive business. But he does things his way. So,
and then probably he realizes it's a lot easier on his body,
yes,
to be doing that than the automotive
Absolutely.
Business.
Absolutely. He just loves it. So he occasionally still does a real estate flip now and then.
Okay. Tell us about the terms I used to define you in the beginning. I said you were an entrepreneur, a blogger, an author, and a mom. I know I understand your book, Reach, mm-hmm. Which I think is a wonderful book, by the way.
Thank you.
I love the double meaning of
mm-hmm.
it. Well, why don't we start there? Let's talk about what that is, why it has two meanings
okay.
to you.
So the book Reach, I wrote maybe 3 years ago. First of all, I wrote it because when I was, say, 17 years old, I graduated from high school. All of my friends were going off to college, and so I decided to apply to colleges. I always knew in my head I wanted to own businesses, but I had never really planned for it. So I graduate from high school. All my friends are going to colleges. I apply to a whole bunch of colleges, and I get declined to all of them because I had spent my last 3 years in high school socializing and not studying. So I remember feeling like, wow, I have all these dreams, and I can't even get into a school at this point. So I ended up writing Reach because I wanted to speak to that person who, wherever they are at in their life or their career, who feels some sense of helplessness, that you have something big that you want to go after, but it seems so far away, so remote, that it almost seems impossible. So what Reach is about, I talk about in the book, it has two meanings. Number one, Reach is about going after a massive dream or a big, hairy, audacious goal. I always say that if your dreams don't scare you, then they're not big enough. Secondly, Reach is about creating a movement of people who are as committed to helping you achieve your dream as you are. Because if your goal is huge, if you're going after something really massive, then you're going to need an army of advocates to help you achieve the goal. So the second type of reach is just building a network of people who want to help you, and then leverage that network so that they're committed to helping you achieve whatever the dream is.
That's great. I like that
Thank
a
you.
Lot. So you did that. That would be then the definition of your author, but you're also somebody who does a lot of blog. Tell me about that.
So first of all, I will say, and I talk about this in my book Reach as well. So mm-hmm. one of the ways that I have created an army of people who help me achieve my dreams, and literally I'll say every business I own, today I own 22 real estate offices. I have a large law firm, a fashion business. I have all these businesses. Everything I've done in my life is a byproduct of a massive group of people from all over the country that have helped me achieve the dream. So how did I build such a massive network? For me, many years ago, I read the book Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, which is it's an old book from the It was written in the early 1900s by Napoleon Hill, and it's a favorite. It's like a cult classic in the business world. But Napoleon Hill had interviewed at the time some amazing business leaders and thought leaders like Andrew Carnegie and Henry Ford. He had interviewed them to find out what they did to achieve their dreams. Then he turned all those interviews into his book, Think and Grow Rich, which in and of itself is an amazing book if for anybody that wants to achieve something big in their life. But what I learned from that beyond just the principles of the book is I said to myself when I read it many years ago, I'm going to go out and interview 500 of the coolest entrepreneurs, business leaders, CEOs, salespeople, and I'm going to find out how they achieved their dreams. So many years ago, I set out on this journey. Now, originally, I didn't know that I was creating reach. So originally, when I started this, all I had was my own little newsletter, and I would reach out to people who are strangers, local business owners and salespeople. I'd just reach out and say, my name is Stacy Alcorn. I was wondering if I could interview you about your success. I'm going to write about it, put it into my newsletter, and I'll give you a copy so that you can send it to your sphere of influence. So for the first few years, that's all I had was my own little newsletter. And as I would interview people, I'd write about them, put it in my newsletter, send them the newsletter, and then I would add that person to my own email list. Over time, that newsletter became a blog, my own blog. Then, because I was putting out a lot of content, I ended up becoming a writer for the Huffington Post and Entrepreneur Magazine. I only start by telling everybody it started with a newsletter, because sometimes when I tell people what I've done and how I've built my empires using this approach, oftentimes they'll say, well, you write for the Huffington Post. It's easier for you to get interviews. All I'll say is that it doesn't necessarily matter. So anyways, many years ago, I reach out to people and I say, I want to interview you about your success. So what I found after doing this for a year or two is that I was going in meeting strangers. I'd spend a half an hour with them asking them questions about where they came from and did they start with money and what did their family do and how did they get their first deal. And that interview process was a very bonding experience that I would go into an interview as a stranger. And by the time I left, I was a good friend. Not only was I a friend, I was a friend that knew this person even better in many cases than their own family knows the person. And so I would keep the friendships going. I would stay in contact with the people. And what I found is that over time, this network I had built, and almost everyone in my network even today came from an interview, they started sending me business. They started coaching me, helping me get capital for my businesses. Like anything I needed for my business, I had access to a person within my network that could help me get what I needed. So even today, I still do two or three interviews a week with people. I've done in the New England area. I've done hundreds of millionaires, billionaires, celebrities, real estate developers. So, for example, in the real estate world, I want to go get a new development in my marketplace, and I don't know the builder at all. Instead of me reaching out as a salesperson saying, I'm Stacy Alcorn from Lair Realty, and I want your development, which is the way many salespeople approach a new client. Instead, I reach out to the developer and say, my name is Stacy Alcorn. I'm interested in interviewing you about all of your success. Do you have 30 minutes to an hour that we could grab a coffee so I could interview you where I will write about your success in the Huffington Post? That's how I start almost every relationship I have. And then
that's very impressive.
Then from there, it grows. And I end up doing business with a lot of the people.
I love that. That's a wonderful approach.
Thank you.
Let's talk about the last piece of that. You said you also are a mom.
Yes.
How's that going?
So I'll say that. So I have a 6-year-old daughter, Ocean. That's actually, I look at like all the business stuff and the writing and stuff. That's not really work. What's actually work is raising a kid. So I have, and what's awesome about her, because I really enjoy, writing about business, and I'm going to tell you, I've learned so many lessons from a six-year-old. It's incredible.
Like what?
Little things like, and I write about this in my book as well. For example, she's really, really good at never taking no for an answer. And I like look at her and I'm like, wow, how can I get better at sales by doing, like, just mirroring what this kid does? Because no matter how many times I say no, it's like she'll come back for more and she'll, like, try a different approach. So I constantly learn all kinds of new things. But it's also been really a great lesson over the last 6 years with her of trying. I don't know if balance exists in the world. I certainly don't have balance in my life, but it's like constant, just doing my best every day to make sure I spend plenty of time with her, that my time with her is real time, that I'm not like mentally somewhere else when I'm in her presence, and doing my best to find ways to balance my life as best as possible.
You also mentioned entrepreneur before, and I think we talked about that, but there's two pieces of entrepreneur that we haven't talked about, and one is, is it my little black box?
Yes.
Tell me, how did that get going? What prompted you to do that?
Yes. So my little black box is a subscription business for jewelry and accessories. And what's really interesting about it, I do have a business partner, Christy, who's also my best friend, who's also a co-author of the book. She runs that whole business. But it was interesting because that came about because we have very similar philosophies on reach, creating a network, etc. And she was in the fashion business before we started My Little Black Box. So the whole idea of My Little Black Box is using fashion as a way to get people outside of their comfort zone. So when you subscribe to My Little Black Box on a monthly basis, the subscribers get jewelry and accessories. What's interesting is you don't get to pick your jewelry and accessories. So it's going to be something different every single month. And oftentimes people will say, well, that's not really my style. What we would say to that is get outside your typical style. Try something new because it creates conversations with people outside the outside of your normal conversations. And if you can get outside your comfort zone when it comes to fashion, maybe, just maybe, you can get outside your comfort zone in business or life and all the other possibilities that are out there for you.
That's good. That's kind of like an opportunity to just test the waters.
Yes.
Something little.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Thank you.
And then there's another part of your entrepreneurship, which is that you are an attorney.
Yes.
And you have a law firm.
Yes.
And that came out of, as I understand it, just something on your bucket list that you said, that's one of the things I'd like to do with my life. So
yes.
Tell me how you did that.
Yes, and I'm going to tell everybody the truth on this. So I'm the type of person that I always have a bucket list of the things that I'm going to do in life. And ever since I was a kid, I always used to watch like murder mysteries, all kinds of shows on TV, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to be an attorney someday. So it was on my bucket list, and on my 30th birthday, I found myself I went to an open house at a local law school, and literally I'm like, well, I might as well do it now. I signed up for law school literally on my 30th birthday. This is going back 12 years. And I ended up, it took 3.5 years. I then had to sit for the Massachusetts bar exam. I became an attorney. I have a law firm. The real estate company feeds the law firm, although I'll tell you, I don't run it. I have some other attorneys that run all of it. The one piece that I will say I learned from that whole experience is it was a massive commitment to get through all the 3.5 years, it was tons of homework, tons of reading. And at the end, I was like, wow, what the heck did I do that for? So I have a law firm because I have the law degree, but if I had to do that all over again, I would never go to law school because I was never that passionate about that dream. So what the one thing that it taught me is when I'm going after something on my bucket list, I look at it closely and I ask myself now, like, why do I want it? How badly do I want it? And is there anything else I could do instead that might be more fulfilling instead of having this, like, never changing or stagnant bucket list that's going to be the same 10 years from now as it is today? So now I change it up regularly. I don't automatically go after something just because I put it on a list 10 years ago.
Okay, lesson learned.
Yes,
huh?
Absolutely.
Well, all right, that begs the obvious questions. Then what is on your bucket list?
I really want to somehow make an impact on the world. Last year, there was one thing that was on my bucket list. It's interesting story. I had met a family roughly 5 or 6 years ago. Interestingly, I don't watch a lot of TV. Mostly I read. After my daughter was born 6.5 years ago, I was at home for a couple of weeks and I was watching TV a day because I didn't even know what else to do if I'm at home. So I was watching TV and I was watching the news, and it was she was about a month after my daughter was born. There was an earthquake in Haiti, like the massive earthquake in Haiti. And there was a local family. I watched this all unfold on the news. There was a family from my area, and their daughter had been in Haiti for a school trip, like a mission trip, and they couldn't contact her. So I would see them every day on the news saying, we still haven't found her, the phone calls are not going through. Then roughly 2 weeks into the search, they come on the news a day. They said that we got word that Brittany's alive. So then they have this whole reunion trip that they're going to do on the news down in Florida. So I'm watching this all unfold. They get to Florida. It turns out it's not Brittany. It's not their kid. It's another kid. So turns out Brittany Gengel died. She was 19. She was 19 years old. I did not know this family at all. They were just from my area. But so I watched this all unfold as I'm holding my little daughter and I'm watching this family who's lost their daughter. And a year goes by and I see them on the news again. And basically what they're saying is that 45 minutes before the earthquake hit, their 19-year-old daughter had sent them a text message saying that the trip to Haiti had changed her life and someday she was going to come back and start an orphanage for children. That was going to be her life mission. So that was 45 minutes before Brittany died. So this family decided they were going to start an orphanage in Haiti. So then I watch it. I friend them on social media because I'm like, I got to see this happen. So I watch this whole thing happen over, say, 4 years. Like, I was blown away by this family. They took a horrible, horrible situation, and they ended up creating an orphanage in a third world country, Haiti, which it's impossible. Like, and it's an earthquake-proof orphanage. It's for 66 children, 33 boys and 33 girls. This family so inspired me. So 3 years ago, I had them come out and speak at an event for all my real estate agents. They get to share their story. They have a new book coming out at the time about their orphanage, etc. So blown away by it. So I feel like I have this pull to Haiti because I've watched this family over several years. So first of all, I got married 2.5 years ago. My husband and I made our entire wedding a charity event to raise money for the orphanage. We raised tons of money to go to the orphanage, and I said, I'm going to start volunteering for the orphanage. So 2 years ago, I had set up a trip to go to Haiti to volunteer for several days at the orphanage. And my mother, remember I told you earlier that when my mother tells me that I shouldn't do something, that to me means I should normally
Exactly.
Forward. So my mother had scared the living daylights out of me. I signed up for this whole mission trip, and my mother started sending me, like, information on kidnappings in Haiti, and people die all the time in Haiti. So I end up canceling my trip.
Oh, you did?
I canceled
it. Wait a minute. Why did you buy her story?
I know.
Usually you do the opposite.
But the good news is, a year later, last November, I ended up spending 5 days in Haiti volunteering at the orphanage. It was so life-changing, so amazing. And so I feel like even today I have a pull to Haiti. I'm working on planning a trip to go again before the end of this year. But I don't know if my overall impact on making the world better will be just in Haiti, but that's the kind of stuff I really want to continue to do and add to my bucket list.
That's great. I would say that most people would define that as being something that's assuming a level of maturity.
Yeah.
So that rather than wanting the sports cars that you can change with your shoes.
Yes.
This is something that's more far-reaching and really does make a difference.
Yes, and you need to get Charlene Gengel on one of your shows. She's the mother of the Brittany Gengel, who's built this amazing, like, the story is so inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
Your listeners would really enjoy it.
Okay, you'll have to make that
connection. Yes, absolutely.
Okay. All right. I know that you have a very strict discipline with what you do with the hours in a day.
Yeah.
Tell us about what that looks like.
So, yes. First of all, my days are super regimented. I usually wake up at 4:30 in the morning every day. There's certain things I feel like I need to do every day in order to win the day. So, for me to win a day, in my own mind, I have to exercise for an hour. And that's either I have a personal trainer I see 3 or 4 days a week, or I'll run somewhere between 3 and 5 miles every day. So I have to work out for an hour. I must read for an hour. So I time block 1 hour of reading every single day.
And what do you read?
Mostly motivational, stuff that helps my head. So motivational, business stuff. I enjoy reading biographies, autobiographies. I enjoy reading about different religions, things like that. So anything that will help just make sure my mindset is correct. So I read for 1 hour every day. And then for my business, I cold call for an hour every day. So just to build my real estate company, the one piece I need to do every day is keep adding new great real estate agents. So I'll cold call people for an hour. If I do those three things each day, I feel like I've won the day, because basically once I do those few things, I feel like every day is just like appointment after appointment. It's really hard to keep control of an entire day.
Yeah. Well, when do you fit in your daughter?
Yeah. So I'll say I'm very lucky. My mother has played a huge role. My mother picks her up from school every day at 3 and keeps her till 6 at night. And during the summer, my daughter spends her time with her grandmother, my mother. Mm-hmm. So I pick her up by 6 every night. And from 6 till 9, that's our time together. And very rarely do I work weekends. So my weekends, I spend time with my family.
Now, have you gone back to developing some of the same lifestyle that you originally had? Do you have the second home?
No.
On the beach and any of that stuff?
No, I feel like if there's anything I learned the first time, is that I just feel like I don't need it. I will tell you, I'm very careful about the stories I tell myself. So, for example, I don't have any of that stuff. I live a modest life. I have a house. I buy used cars that I can pay off quickly. I don't have a second home. I don't have multiple cars, things like that. But I'm super careful about what I don't say to myself, I came from nothing, I'd be okay with nothing. I tell myself every day I'm a billionaire in the making. I also spend a lot of time asking myself how important is being a billionaire. One of the reasons I have that on my bucket list of becoming a billionaire is, first of all, because I had read a statistic a few years ago of the number of female billionaires to male billionaires, and the number is extremely, extremely low. It's a sad number. So I'm like, wow, that's crazy. There's not enough female billionaires in the world. So I said, I might as well be one. But I also realized that I am perfectly comfortable with wealth today, because I do think wealth makes it easier to achieve some of the other things on my bucket list, like changing the world.
Yeah. So let's go back to that conversation about wealth. When you talk about wealth, you're talking about financial wealth.
Yes.
Okay. What discipline do you bring to creating financial wealth like you have with your daily routine? Is there anything similar to that?
Yes. One thing that I do, and this was because I happened to read a book. I read The Automatic Millionaire a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And by, I think it's David Bach. So basically the premise of that book is that if you're not good at saving money, which I'll say I'm not great at saving money, then set up a system so that money is getting saved automatically on your behalf every month, which makes it difficult for you to touch it. So after I read that book, and it was many years ago, I set up an automatic withdrawal from my bank account. So my paycheck from my work goes into a bank account, and money is automatically withdrawn every single month, and it goes into a stock account. So I have a stockbroker that manages it, and it's probably not as complicated as I think to get the money out, but it's complicated enough that I don't know how to get my money out of that, so I don't touch it. So it works out great. I wouldn't, because otherwise I'd probably just spend it if it's in my account. So I do have a discipline, I realize, but and hire good people that understand how all of that works and let them work on that.
What would you say is one of the best financial decisions you ever made?
There's a few. I'd say definitely the automatic withdrawal from my checking account into a, to me, it's like a forced savings account that is difficult to access. That's one big one. The other piece is, for me, I have literally no credit card debt. So just from when I was younger and had built up wealth, I built up credit card debt, which I eventually paid off. But I choose not to use credit cards anymore. I have my ATM, which I use like a credit card. So if I need something, I'm buying it off of money that's already in the bank instead of future money that I have to earn. I try to look at debt as, debt to me is tied to time. So the more debt I have, the more time that I can't spend with my family, because that debt has to be repaid. And the only way to repay debt is with time, through working.
Well, how did you do that when in the real estate business? Did you pay cash for all these properties that you purchased?
No, back then. And so even on my own house, right now I own my own house and a commercial building, and those have mortgages. Okay. So back then when I was flipping real estate, same thing, I would take out mortgages, but I took out, for those flips, it was a specific kind of rehab mortgage, so they would lend you the money to buy the house and repair it, and then I'd sell it. So, yeah, I do.
Are those still around, by the way?
Yes, kind of, yes.
Yeah?
Still an amazing program that I recommend to people. Yep.
What's one of the worst financial decisions you ever made?
Multiple sports cars was probably not a great decision. Even, I'd say, and I keep going back to this because my husband's always like, during the summer, we'll drive by a house and he'll be like, let's buy a second home. And second homes are great if you're going to use it. Mm-hmm. I had a second home for many years, and what I found is, it, with an entrepreneurial lifestyle, it's hard to use it. So, and then it, if you're going to rent it to people, it becomes a whole second job of trying to rent it out for summer rentals, things like that. So for me, going back to a second home is not a great decision because of the amount of work. And I looked at it, I'm like, for the amount of money I was spending on that, I could have like one really nice vacation every year. So, and it would be just a fraction of what I was spending on having the second home. In general, real estate, in my opinion, is a great investment, but it's the business I'm in.
Yeah. I'm chuckling because I feel the same way. We have a second home,
mm-hmm.
and I feel tied to it.
Yes.
And I look at all the expenses that are relative to just maintaining
it. Yes.
And I say, wow, we could have had a great vacation.
Right. So, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. I know it sounds good, but it's just in the reality of it, it's a totally different story.
Yes.
Tell me about the vision boards that you use.
Yes.
Are you still using them?
Yes. So
is this something that's done online or do you do this physically?
I do.
With a board.
You can do it online. I choose not to. I have a couple, actually. I have one in my office, which is a cardboard piece of paper, like a big piece of cardboard, where when I see something that I want to manifest in my life at a later date, I will cut it out of a magazine or a book, and I will put it on my vision board. Also, the master bathroom mirror at my house, because I'm getting ready every day in front of the master bathroom mirror. It's all cutouts of what my life will look like in the future. I've had so many things happen in my life that are a direct result of having a vision board. Just the fact that you see something every single day in front of you, your mind ends up somehow through the law of attraction manifesting what you're seeing on that vision board every day. So mm-hmm. I learned about the vision board, interestingly, many years ago from The Secret, a book by Rhonda yep. Byrne. And in the book, John Assaroff talks about how to create a vision board. And he said how he manifested the house he wanted several years before he had created a vision board, and he took a picture out of a magazine, like an Architectural Digest magazine, of what his future house would look like. And then many years later, he moves to San Diego, buys a house, pulls out his vision board, and he realizes that's the house that he had cut out and put on the magazine. So after I read that, I put a picture of John Assaroff on my vision board. I'm like, all right. So a lot of my vision board, because I don't want for a lot of material things in life, what I want is I love more relationships. So I put on my vision board people I'm going to befriend. So many years ago, I put a picture. After I saw The Secret, I put a picture of John Assaroff on my vision board. I'm like, oh, we're going to be friends. So he's on my – and this isn't something that you actually have to stare at and think about every day. It's just there. So for many years, he was on my vision board. And 2 years ago, it's like January or February, I get a call out of the blue from my good friend Michael Mayer, who wrote The 7 Levels of Communication. Now, I only talk to Michael Mayer 3 or 4 times a year. He does not live near me, but we're friends. We've both written books, so every once in a while we'll chat. So January, February, 2 years ago, Michael Mayer calls me out of the blue, and he's like, hey, what are you doing on – I don't remember the exact date. What are you doing on April 10th? I'm like, oh, nothing. I live in Boston. He's like, can you go to San Diego for a night? I'm like, yeah, I'll go to San Diego. What do you got? He's like, I got invited to John Assaroff's house for a dinner party. Oh. And I know you love books. I figure you must know who John Assaroff is. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, did you know he's on my vision board? He's like, no, I had no idea. He's like, I just know you like books, so I figured you'd know him. But literally 3 weeks or a month later, I was at John Assaroff's house, hanging out in his living room, having dinner, watching his wife salsa dance. It was like, it was so surreal. I was in the house that he talks about from the Secret.
From the book.
And I saw the actual vision board hanging up in his gym. I'm like, this is crazy. Like, there's no possible way I could have manifested that to happen, except the fact that it had been on my vision board for so long. It's crazy.
Well, you also have something, too, that I want you to know I've adopted myself, because it's a great statement. You say, today, I'm going to meet the right people at the right time for the betterment of my business or my life.
Correct.
That is so on target with the whole concept of The Secret and
yes.
manifesting that. So I love saying that to myself every morning because it's amazing how that stuff does come true.
Absolutely.
But I can't believe that thing about John Nassaroff.
Oh, I had
that is phenomenal.
So I had it happen again this year. It happens a lot. I mean, it happens a lot. But this year, I have had on my vision board, one of my favorites is Seth Godin. And Seth Godin, who's impossible to reach, by the way. Like, he's written 20-plus New York Times bestselling books. He keynotes all around the world. It's almost unbelievable how it happened. But I had his picture on my vision board forever because I'm like, oh, I'm going to get to know Seth Godin. So I had booked in November, December last year, I'm having a terrible... Well, I decided November, December last year, I'm going to a real estate conference in New York City in February of 2016. So I buy my ticket to the conference. February 2016 rolls around. The market's terrible. Real estate's always bad in January, February. We're waiting for spring market. I was just in a terrible mood. I never bought my flight or hotel for the conference. So I'm like, I'm just not going to go. Then I'm watching on Facebook. I see other real estate people are at the event. And the whole reason I had originally wanted to attend the event is Seth Godin is going to be one of the keynote speakers. So it's a Tuesday morning. The event started on Monday. It's Tuesday. I Google to see when Seth Godin's speaking. It says he's speaking Wednesday. So I'm like, all right, maybe I could just fly in for one night. I'll go see him Wednesday morning as the keynote speaker, and then I'll fly home. So anytime I travel anywhere in the world now, I always reach out to strangers to ask if I can interview them. So I go on my Facebook to see who might I know from New York City. I find a girl named Sadia who is a hat maker in New York City. And we became Facebook friends through a mutual friend. I literally don't know her at all. I know she lives in New York City and she's in her 30s and she built a hat company, but her hats are like in Neiman Marcus and stuff. So I'm like, she might be a cool interview. So yeah. I reach out to this complete stranger. I say, I'm flying in for one night. Could I come? If you're interested, I'd love to come interview you about your success. So she says, yes. I go land in New York. I take a taxi over to interview Sadia, complete stranger. Sitting there, by the way, one of the side benefits of interviewing people is that you get inspired by them. So I'm in a foul mood about the real estate business. I'm sitting down, I'm interviewing this stranger about her hat business, and immediately I feel like uplifted because like she's gone through all kinds of struggles in her business and she's just amazing. So she's talking about how her favorite art in the world is making hats and she wants to make great art. And I said to her, oh, you need to read The Icarus Deception by Seth Godin because it's all about how entrepreneurs in general are all artists and we're put here to ship our best art, which is whatever we do for our business. She says to me, not only did I read the book, Seth Godin is my personal business mentor and coach.
Oh,
crazy. She's a complete stranger. I don't even know her. Literally, I had tears welling up in my eyes. And she's like, what's the matter? I'm like, I can't even believe you're seeing this. I'm like, the only reason I'm in New York City is because I'm having like a terrible week in business. And I just came to see Seth Godin speak tomorrow morning at a real estate conference. He's amazing. She's like, do you want to have breakfast with him? I'm like, yeah, I do. So the next morning, I spent an hour with Seth Godin at breakfast. I interviewed him. I wrote an article about him. The only way that could have manifested was because he was on my vision board for so long. It's crazy.
Oh, it's crazy, but it's wonderful.
Yes.
It's very inspirational. Well, Stacey, I think we have to call it a day here.
Thank you.
I also want to just say, how can people find you or reach you if they'd like to get a hold of you?
Yeah, so you can find me at Stacey, S-T-A-C-E-Y, Alcorn, A-L-C-O-R-N. StaceyAlcorn.com is a website where you can see a bunch. You'll find all my contact info on there. I'm also on LinkedIn, Facebook. You'll find me if you put me in Google. It's been awesome being on your show today. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Stacey. And thanks again, everyone, for listening, and we'll talk to you the next time. Goodbye.
We hope you've enjoyed your time with us on this episode of the Power of the Purse podcast. If you're ready to take action, go to womenofsubstancellc.com/call and sign up for an exclusive 15-minute one-on-one call with your host, Lynn Evans. Thanks again, and join us next time to explore more ways you can take control of your finances and your life.